Hey guys, welcome to episode 77 of the JV Club with my friend and guest Ursula Whitaker. Ursula is a dear friend of mine whom I have had the pleasure of doing a lot of traveling with because she is married to the marvelous Oscar Nunez. You may know him from The Office or from the film The Proposal. He is always marvelous and hilarious. Ursula is also marvelous and hilarious. She is an actress, writer, and producer in her own right and is also the mother of quite a darling young daughter. I want to get into some shout outs. I want to first acknowledge, as always, Jules and Victoria for just being my backup producers and coming to basically do whatever thing I desperately need help with that I can't get done. They've not once been like, sorry. So thank you girls so much. And I don't mean girls in a condescending way. It's just, listen, you're my girls. I want to thank for your emails. I want to thank Chris N, Jessica B, John R, and Nissa. Congrats to Nissa. I want to thank on Facebook, Nicole. And Nicole, guys, posted something about, if you check out the Facebook posts on the JV Club page, she's asking about good books to for her, is it her sister or her cousin? I'm sorry, I don't have it right in front of me, Nicole, but is traveling to Africa and needs good books to bring for girls ages 10 to 15. And she's welcoming suggestions, and I know that you guys will have good suggestions for that. Heather W, I loved your picture of the Paul F. Tompkins surf suit as inspired by my conversation with Sarah Watkins. Allison, thanks for putting that picture of Kahootie up. Kahootie is this commercial kind of fortune teller cootie catcher that you can buy. It looks enormous, and I don't know if I like the way it looks in general. I got a bad feeling about it. What do you guys think? On the Jane Nerdist page, thank you guys so much for your comments. You know who you are. Not going to break it down because I have a lot of Twitter people I want to thank really quickly. So forgive me for that. I want to remind everyone to check out the Unslut Project, the Kickstarter campaign for the Unslut Project. I want to thank Terry B. Hi, Terry. On Twitter, I want to thank Gabe. Oh, my sweet, sweet Gabe posted. I just actually retweeted it, but he wanted Jessica St. Clair and I to see this girl who had her wedding shot like Anne of Green Gables. It's all Anne of Green Gables. It's so awesome. I'm obsessed. Brett W, I love that you love the Oz books. Charles, yes, I do love Walter Bishop so very much. Jim J, I love that you were the type of person who would do Batman transcripts. Tina, thank you so much for sending me that stuff. I'm not going to get too into what it is because it might spoil the Kickstarter campaign, but Tina, I want to acknowledge you and thank you again for sending me that thing that I needed. Misty on Twitter, Nicole B on Twitter, who also wanted psychic powers. Professor Hagrid, I can only assume you're the actual Professor Hagrid, gave me a wonderful solution to Whitley's incredible shedding. I look forward to pursuing that. Nina on Twitter and Paul, who wants to check out the NeverEnding Story. Like I said on Twitter, I hope it holds up. That was a lot of shout outs, guys, but what can I say? You're communicative and fabulous. I hope you enjoy this episode, and I certainly look forward to talking with you more in social media and next time on the podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I just finished saying there's never an easy way to start these, as if this is like a thing to dread. Listen, there's no easy way to say this, but welcome to the podcast. I'm so sorry.
We're breaking
my
up.
Condolences. Ursula, I've brought you here today to tell you that our friendship is over.
Oh.
On mic.
Okay.
On the microphone.
Wow. 2013.
This is very, listen, I can't do anything without the public having full frontal view of every single moment in my life.
Excellent.
That's what reality TV has done for us. Everybody needs to know every personal tidbit.
So Burning Love was not pretend for you?
No, 100% real.
Excellent.
100%
real. And so
real.
You're a lesbian.
I guess I must be.
Okay.
I guess I must be. I found out while I was doing that show.
Good.
So it's all out in the open.
Excellent.
And then the other thing that I was just saying before we started recording was that that Oscar and Ursula's wedding was one of the most lovely weddings that I've been to. Possibly the loveliest.
Thank you. It was it's definitely my favorite.
That's reassuring.
It is, right?
That's reassuring.
I think that's probably what every wife or bride-to-be is probably panicked about, that her wedding is going to be like the worst wedding she's ever been to.
Right. And it's her own.
Yeah.
But I even remember asking you, I think I asked you at the wedding, is this, are you having the thing where that brides have sometimes where they are barely present for the wedding because it's just a whirlwind and all of that? And you were like, no, I'm really here. Like, I'm here and I'm checked in and I'm experiencing, you know what I'm saying? Cause yes. Like, you didn't seem like it wasn't that crazy whirlwind kind of event that I've been to weddings where I just feel, I just feel like I didn't spend any time with the people that I came to celebrate.
I know.
They seemed like they were everywhere at once and that like the entire time they were just getting photos taken. And I just didn't have that experience with you guys. It felt like we hung out.
It was
nice and small. That helped.
It was kind of funny in that a couple of friends had said to me, when you're in the middle of standing up at the altar or whatever, you know, you want to call it, we had kind of like an arch.
They
said,
have an arch.
Look down at your feet and say, this is where I'm at. And
nice.
I had no shoes on because we were on the sand. I wanted to be more grounded. And I did look down at my blue toenails.
Uh-huh.
and then there was a moment where we picked the craziest friend to marry us because we thought, you know, he's so sweet and lovely and he's fun. And yes, he's going to say something that probably embarrasses us,
uh-huh.
but it'll be worth it
uh-huh.
because it'll be so fun. And
to go into it anticipating being embarrassed.
And he did. And he totally did embarrass me.
Yeah.
And I think...
I can't remember what he said. That
he just kept talking.
Oh, yeah.
And he went on a tangent.
Oh, yeah. I seem to remember you giving a really funny look to the crowd.
He
like
derailed.
He's still talking.
And he just went off into
That's
his
right.
head and he was spinning. And I literally looked and I said to him early on, he said, you know, I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth before the wedding. And I said, well, don't take it personally. I might give you a sign to bring you
fair.
Back.
That's fair.
And I did. I did. I was like, I gave him the let's wind this up and get to, you know, the actual vows, which we came here to do. And I don't know if that came out like I was a big ass in
no,
front
it didn't.
Of the, you know, friends and family.
No, but I remember that now that you say all of this, I do remember him going off, and I swear I seem to remember you looking at the audience.
I did.
Playing the straight man, like playing the, like, of Dick and Tommy Smothers brothers, like you were Dick looking at the crowd, like, yeah, this is happening. Like, he's definitely still talking.
But we deserved it because we knew that he would surprise us in a way that would totally embarrass us. And
I will say also that Oscar, when he was walking down the aisle, pretended to continue walking like he was confused.
See,
not that he didn't want to marry you. He just did a comic bit like he didn't realize.
Oh, no,
he
didn't want
to
marry me. He didn't want to marry me. But he knew, but he wanted to be with me.
Yeah.
And he knew that that was important to me.
Yeah.
I say after much couples counseling.
Yeah.
He loves Peter Sellers. In fact, he hangs in our living room.
Yeah, there's a lot of Peter Sellers posters and stuff like that.
And that's a very Peter Sellers 100%. Moment. He just kept walking down the aisle and past the I want to say hoopah. We're not Jewish.
Yeah.
It wasn't a hoopah. It was just a hoop. And he walked right past the hoop, straight out into the towards the ocean.
Yes.
And then luckily, Eric, our man who married us, caught him and brought him back. I missed it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was, like, in the
back, right?
And so I heard everyone laugh. And then later after the wedding, people told me, and I saw it on the video.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I missed the funniest bit.
It was pretty funny.
In the
it
whole wedding.
It was pretty funny. Yeah, it was definitely funny. But yeah, it was good. It was just, like, very relaxed and... Everything, nothing felt like it took too long, except maybe Eric's meanderings. Maybe. I mean, I don't remember thinking that, but it was, but now that you're saying it, it makes sense. And then just like nothing was too too long or too short. It was just like everything was the right amount. It was like the ceremony was the right amount of time. The hangout and like kind of reception outside was the right amount of time. The going in and the eating and the dancing was the right amount of time. It was just very good.
I made a couple of deals with myself, which really helped me. And if and I always tell anybody who's about to get married, who's a woman, the same, which is, when I was planning it, I kept saying, I'm just going to plan a party that I happen to get married at.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want us to have a good time. And I remember one morning I woke up at like 5 a.m. panicked, and I couldn't sleep anymore. And I was worried because I was like, oh no, I've got to make those stupid cards with people's names and calligraphy. And I've got to decide where everybody sits.
Yeah.
And by the end of the day, I was like, you know what? No.
Yeah.
On sets, people, there's like 100 more
people. Yeah, people will figure out where they're going to sit.
Exactly.
I appreciate that so much.
I was like, I'm not telling people where to sit, and now I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Now I've just gotten rid of a whole bunch of like stress of like your mother and my aunt have to sit next to each other. And then the second thing was the advice, which... it's kind of funny to look around at your friends and family when you're up there and just kind of absorb that moment and look at your feet and like you're right here.
Oh, I just love that.
And funnily enough, which funnily is a word.
It is, but it's one of my, it's one of my favorites because it sounds such like a non-word.
Sounds wrong.
Yeah.
When I did that, Eric was off on a tangent. And then when he came back from his tangent, he then said, take a moment to look around.
He's one step behind you.
Dude, you're so not present. I just did that. And I was like, all right, here we go. Why not? Take him in a second time. So I took him in a second time. And we had a blast.
Yeah.
We actually had the most fun I think we've ever had at a party. So much so that like when it was over, we were the most depressed we'd ever been.
Oh!
And our friends luckily went to dinner with us that night, which was like a sweet consolation prize.
Yeah.
And we stayed at the nearby hotel that night. But we were like, that was the best party of our lives. And it's over. You can't have that same party next year, right? I mean, I was like, is that why people renew their vows, really? So they can have a second awesome party?
Well, what other circumstances? And this is like, not to get too Sex in the City on everybody, but that's one of the things that's tough about making the decision or thinking that maybe isn't what you need to do. And I remember thinking that even just inside of, you know, my relationship with Chris, which was, I don't think either one of us felt necessarily like it was important to be husband and wife, but there was a part of us that liked the idea of just having a reason to get everyone together. And so I do like the idea of whether it's a wedding or it's a non-wedding, right, that you have occasion to gather, you know, the people that really are important to you and just get them all together. Because it's as much about you guys getting to enjoy that, hopefully, in a perfect scenario, that it doesn't hopefully feel too much like obligation and like that it does, you know, I know that the trickiness of deciding how big or how small and how many people, I know that that is like super stressful. At least that would be for me. But that when all said and done and you've sort of made the tough decisions, that it hopefully would be as much for you guys to be like, oh my God, I can't look at all these faces I love.
Yeah.
I get to see them all at once. This is a miracle. Especially with Oscars and like his mom and, you know, being from a different country and, I mean, weren't there people that like, definitely was like, it's amazing that everybody's here at the same time.
I know probably, mothers come up for most of your guests, I would imagine, when you talk about, mothers are a big deal to daughters.
Yeah.
But the fact that my mother was able to show up and the circumstances about her, that was a really big deal. I mean, she always wanted to see me get married. It was a very big deal for her. But she suffered from mental illness. And in her head, she's always had, like, she would make so much stress about, especially if you give somebody... if you would give her advance warning, she would spend whatever time you gave her spinning in her head at what she should wear, who would be there,
what might go wrong,
that she inevitably would show up 6 hours late or when it was over or not show up at all.
Yeah.
My stepmom, who's always been, she showed up in my life when I was 4, and she was like the first, I say she's the first adult on the scene of my childhood.
Yeah.
And she really was my mom figure. She would talk to my real mom, take her phone calls for like 6 months leading up to our wedding, and like talk her down from her tree and say, no, you're going to come. And my mom would say, I have nothing to wear. I have no money. And they would talk about it. And she would listen to my mom spin the same stuff and just coach her. And that was why. So to have like my two moms walk down the aisle and like show up and witness, it was
that's profound.
A really big gift.
Yeah.
A really
that's
big
so
gift.
Huge.
Yeah.
Well, let's if you don't mind, I'd love to launch into that a little bit. Okay. Just about your where you're from and all this good stuff, because you just sort of tipped into it a little bit. So where were you when you were 4? Where were you born and raised, and did you stay there into your teens?
I'm still here. Los Angeles.
LACA.
Yeah, somebody's got to be from here.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went to college here because I knew I wanted to act and write and do this thing.
Mm-hmm, this thing.
This thing this that we call thing. Hollywood. I never got out. And you know what? I was actually very attached to my dad and my stepmom, that I really wasn't ready for my like year abroad until my late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed in Los Angeles. I went to USC.
But to your point, I mean, it can be trickier when what you want is truly in the city that you're from. You know,
yes.
It's like there's yeah. nothing wrong with that. It changes the way, the scope of sort of what college means and stuff. It's like a really, unless you had like been so focused on getting out of LA that you forced yourself to go to NYU or something just right. to be in a different place where you could also act. But it's hard because you're just around, you're around it with the, with a total knowledge that like, you've got a head start in a lot of ways, you know, just in the sense of like, you see that it's all around you and you sort of see the mechanics of it, and you don't necessarily also have that like did you have the sort of knowing that you wanted to do it, did you have the perspective about it that someone not from Hollywood might have, which like when I was in Tucson, I mean, I thought of Hollywood as like Hollywood. I guess I did think of it as like that's where everyone goes, and I mean, I think that that's like where everyone goes to become a star, no, but I definitely thought I associated it with like glamour and I associated it with success, I think, and you know.
Absolutely.
So being from here and wanting to do it, you must see have seen all sides of it, no? Or did you?
I was kind of chomping at the bit. My dad and my stepmom were very much of the mind that acting is something you... When I told them when I was a kid, I said, I want to be an actress. I knew when I was about 6 years old, we got our first VHS machine.
Ooh, big
and,
stuff.
And they gave me 2 VHS tapes, and one was The Sound of Music, and the other was Rebecca from Sunnybrook Farm with Shirley Temple.
Okay.
But I really, really, I enjoyed both, but I really, like so many I hear in their stories of why they became an actor or actress, mostly actresses. Mm-hmm. I watched The Sound of Music over and over and over again.
It's true. People, that is so beloved.
Yeah.
I had only seen it maybe, I think I had just seen it maybe twice, maybe once, but probably twice before I recently saw it at the Bowl when they did The Sound
of Music. I still haven't done that.
You'll love it.
I know.
You'll love it. It's pretty precious.
As a child watching it, I would swing back from, I either wanted to be Maria or I wanted to be her daughter, and I couldn't pick which one I wanted more. I just keep going back and forth. But round six or seven, I told them, oh, I want to be an actress. And they said, well, that's a fine hobby, but you're going to have to find a real profession. And
what were their professions that they regarded as, like, did that have something to do with why they thought of as real?
My dad was a producer, and right about the time I was about 4 or 5 years old,
he and my stepmom were actually, they were introduced by his neighbor. She had an idea to open a clothing business and she needed money. And my dad had his last bit of finances that he wanted to invest. And so they were introduced and by the end of dinner, they were in love with each other. And so, and then she was introduced to me and she tells it that I was very attached to my father and very protective. So when we would get in the car, I would tell her that she would have to get in the back seat while I got in the front seat with my father.
The princess.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And that's of course, you know, back in the 70s where there's no car seats for a 4-year old.
Yeah.
Know, I'm sitting in the front. She very cleverly said, well, how about I sit in the front seat and you sit on my lap and we sing songs together. And it's the 70s,
well
so
played.
You can do that.
Yeah.
And so I did that.
Well played. Yeah.
What about, so you're, but you're not an only child. So how does that
right.
figure
I have
in?
I have a younger sister who was born when I was 6 years old. She's okay. my stepmom's daughter with my father. We have the same dad.
Gotcha.
But it feels like... It feels like a real whole sister. It doesn't feel
like
a half sister.
Oh, yeah. I mean, which is such a weird... You were so little when your stepmom came into the picture. How long was your mom, I don't want to say out of the picture, but how? When did your parents, when did your biological mom and your dad split
They
up,
were or? Out of each other's... she moved out by the time I was a year old.
Okay.
And so I have no
yep.
Memories of them together. Therefore, I never had any fantasies of them being together.
So it was just you and your dad for
it was
until your stepmom came along
four
yeah
and then she cleverly won me over
yeah she gotcha
yeah she
singing
did.
Songs in the front seat
I
that's
know.
A good move
oh
that's
yeah
a good solid move
I know she's pretty awesome she's always been smart like that too you know
well I do I mean it's so interesting. That's pretty unusual, right? Being a small child and being raised by your dad.
You know what? I actually was living with my mom.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Until the age of, I think I was, I was a third grader. And you are 8 years old when you're a third grader. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I was, third grade was a very tumultuous year. And it kind of got started with, I was living with my mother. And my mother wanted to be a rock star. And
yeah, I mean, that was, I guess that's my question why I made the assumption is like, was she showing signs of mental illness then or?
Yes. And it was.
Hilarious. Now we are just talking about mental illness.
I know, right?
We were joking at the beginning because Ursula had happened to listen to a couple of classic
just
episodes.
Two.
She picked Tina and Maria and she was like, this is a mental illness podcast.
Let me get all my mental illness stories together.
At all. But you cracked it wide open when you mentioned that.
I know. But then there's things that happen in the universe and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
The universe is telling me something. You know, I learned probably about 4 years ago that my mom, she was never professionally diagnosed, but I had been to a lot of therapy and the last therapist who was really awesome had said to me, I can tell you off the record from listening to you for over a year that your mom probably suffers from delusional disorder and you should look it up. Because it'll help you understand, because I spent so much of my adult years, who am I kidding? I spent my teenage years and my childhood trying to reason with her, trying to get her to respect my boundaries and get her to play more of the mom role and try and get to be her daughter. But once I looked it up and delusional disorder, it means that it's usually accompanied with paranoia and you have delusions of grandeur. And that's pretty much what I was experiencing. You also, you don't take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I always used to say that my mom felt like an alcoholic, except there was no liquor.
Interesting. And how confusing to feel like you can kind of start to recognize something that seems like it should make sense, but then you don't even have the proof that it would. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't say, oh, look, she's addicted to that.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Yeah.
Her fixation on that.
Yeah.
So when I was told this, all of a sudden I had this release of like, oh, I can stop trying to get her to be reasonable. I can let her be who she is. Yeah. I can have some sort of acceptance. And I funnily use that word again, I found a letter that I had written to her probably about 10 years ago, where I'm trying to set boundaries and I'm saying, you know, I'm not comfortable with this and I can't have my mother would call and she would just launch. She'd never say, "Hi, sweetie, how are you?" She would launch into wherever she was at. And it would include like, "I'm picking up poo for the, from the dogs in the yard and I'm pulling weeds and I feel like this and the bill collectors and men are evil." And there were certain points that she hit over and over again. And 45 minutes later, she would come up for air and I would say, "I have to go."
Oh.
And then she would say, "Oh, how are you?" Because she wanted to keep me there.
Yeah.
But I was trying to eke out a relationship with her so that that wouldn't happen to me anymore, because it brings up a lot of rage when you get held hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading this letter, I just had like this big, like, "Oh, Ursula." Like it was like, had this compassion for me 10 years ago. And I was like, "Oh, well, at least, you know, now, you know, you don't have to keep hitting your head against that. It's not going to change it."
Yeah. Oh my God, what a relief.
Yeah, people, they always
say... to know that the thing that you thought you would have relief is actually, like, the irony that it's actually acknowledging that you're never going to get the thing you thought you needed to get relief is the thing that gives you relief.
Yeah.
It's like, "Oh, no, you're never getting that."
No.
But be relieved by that.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
So, of course, like anything, as we get older, our... left unchecked, your habits or things about you, your quirks, they get more and more, they kind of gain momentum.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young, 6 years old, the delusional disorder had a different kind of flavor. It was more, I don't want to say more fun, but it was lighter. So she wanted to be a rock star and she didn't want to get up in the morning because she would practice with her band in the garage till 4 a.m. And so she one day said, "Let's get in the car. This is how you're going to walk to the bus stop." And it wasn't a school bus. It was the public bus, which is kind of not what you want to do to an 8-year-old in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I remember I was so mad at her and I said, "No, I want you to take me to school." And she said, no, "I can't get up because I go to bed at 4 a.m. And then she said, "No, you're going to take 2 different buses and they stop here at this one bus stop. And then you'll catch the second bus and then get off across the street from your school and blah, blah, blah." And I'm going to a private school in Santa Monica called Carl Thorpe. And one of the teachers saw me get off the bus somewhere around the 2-week mark of me doing this.
Yeah.
And I was really
This is third angry. Grade.
Yeah, this is third grade. I was really angry that I was being put in this situation. I didn't want this much responsibility. But right around the 2-week mark, I adjusted, which is so funny because they always say to start a new habit, it takes about 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, that's really true.
It really is true.
Even when you're a kid and you don't know to count those days.
No, you have no idea.
Yeah.
And that day at the second bus stop, there was this woman. She was a woman. And I was talking to her. And I was like, "Oh, I've made my first friend."
Yeah.
And I was kind of getting into this independence. This is awesome. All right.
Okay.
And I see my dad pull up in his station wagon and he gets out of the car and he says, "Get in the car." And I'm horrified because I think that he's going to essentially, like, I'm Oz, and he's going to pull the curtain and show her that I'm a little girl,
right,
and that I'm not an adult like her.
Up till that point, you had her.
I had her. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah. And he, and I'm like, no. And he said, get in the car. And I was like, no. Oh. He picked me up and put me under his arm.
Oh, no.
There's no way. No. I'm a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm a 6-year-old. I'm like, and so I wouldn't speak to him the rest of the day. My mother calls the police. There's like helicopters flying over the house.
Whoa.
My stepmom takes me to a newly rented apartment in Beverly Hills, because this was, the helicopters was at our house in Malibu. And, so we duck out and we're, I don't know any of this. This, the helicopter part is told to me later.
Yeah.
And Lou and I, Louie's my stepmom, and we're in this apartment that apparently has no furniture in Beverly Hills, hiding out, having picnics, you know, and I start living with them from that point on.
So was the helicopter thing, so the idea was that you're basically your mom, your stepmom and your dad had quote unquote kidnapped you
exactly.
from your mom.
Exactly.
But we all, but like obviously given the circumstances, yeah. we understand what that really.
And he told me later that he had a conversation with her where she said, I'm going to take you back to court because I'm the one who has custody, not you, and you can't have her. And he said, go ahead, take me to court.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put your daughter on the bus because you want to be a rock star. And and so she said, okay, I'm not going to fight you on that. And I ended up living with them. And I changed schools 2 more times. And I finally settled around the beginning of midway of 4th grade. But like my grades, everything kind of changed. And you could see it. I went from like being an A student to getting a D in California history.
Oh,
yes.
D in California
Got
history.
A talk
How
from my dad.
You? Yeah.
Very serious, scary talk.
I'm trying to remember if I took Arizona history of any kind. This is a side note that has nothing to do with anything about what you just said, except for I just wanted to quickly say, how important was Julie Andrews to a generation of children for one reason or another? Because I didn't, you know, I had seen A Sound of Music again, maybe once or twice, but I loved Mary Poppins, and that's another like huge influential, like she
Julie
was
Andrews.
Such an important figure. And then my dad introduced me when I was far too young to understand what it was really about to Victor Victoria, which she's also the star of, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, if you
is
haven't
it?
Seen it. Yeah, it is so good. It's so ahead of its time, I think. This idea of, you know, for those of you, I mean, I hope everyone's seen it at this point. It's not like it's a movie that no one's ever heard of, but it's a musical, but it's about, 1920s Paris. And, it's Robert Preston, the amazing, amazing late great Robert Preston, who was also in the Music Man movie. And Julie Andrews, and she is, a very, very poor, singer. And he gets the idea that, if she presents herself to be a man who's a female impersonator, that would be really special. So they have to create this male persona for her in her life. And so the idea is she's a woman pretending to be a man, pretending to be a woman. And James Garner's in it. And it is like an amazing movie. And it so holds up. And it's so charming. I think it's Blake Edwards directed it. And even if you don't like musicals, don't think of it as a musical, because the music is specific to, like, it's not like anybody just launches into song in the middle of like a scene. It's like the music is specific to show business. Like they're on stage performing.
Yeah.
I went through a phase in my teens where I was like, I don't want to see someone just launch into song in the middle of like a dramatic moment.
Oh, it happened that early for you.
Yeah. I got snobby about it really early. And then I sort of went back and forth about it. And I was like true to the musicals of my youth, but I didn't want to see any, like I didn't see Rent until Neil Harris directed it at the Hollywood Bowl. I literally had not seen it until like 2 years ago, because I just was like, I just wasn't interested in contemporary musicals. I was like, okay with the ones that I had grown up with, but I wasn't interested in seeing anything new.
But you liked musicals as a child.
I did. But even as a child, I feel like I liked the idea of performing in them more than I liked just watching them. And I think I liked you know, I didn't want to, if I was going to go see something live that was a musical, I just wanted to be in it desperately.
Yeah.
I could watch the stuff that I grew up with, you know, on television, but, But somehow that made, it was okay because it was like a movie at the time. It was still like showbiz, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I never had the, I wasn't the person who wanted to go to like Broadway and see the newest, hottest musical. I just was like, I don't know if I need that. But I have tremendous respect for performers in it. And if someone asked me to do one tomorrow, I'm sure I'd be like, okay.
Oh yeah. Because you're still keeping true to the theme that I would rather be in one than watch one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think I was in my 20s when I had... early 20s and I had seen Cats and I loved it. I loved Cats. And then I saw it a second time. I loved it. And then I saw it a third time and I'm like, I hate musicals. Why am I seeing this for a third time?
Did I see? Yeah, I think I might have seen Cats, but that's a really good example of something that feels a little bit like The Emperor's New Clothes. I apologize to all of those of you out there who really like Cats, but that's a good example of something that like somehow everyone was fooled into thinking it was really special, but I'm not sure it's that special. Listen, the Cats hate mail is going to pour in.
You know, and every once in a while, I still make it to a musical. We saw Memphis on Broadway, and we were reluctant. Mm-hmm. Oscar and I were like, ugh, we hate musicals, but everyone says Memphis is awesome.
Yeah.
And we went, and we so enjoyed it.
Okay.
And we're like, okay.
Yeah.
We understand that we don't like musicals, and they still won us over.
Yeah.
Still outstanding.
I really enjoyed the Book of Mormon, which I was ready to hate because everyone told me I was going to love it so much. I was like, I'll show you by hating it. I really enjoyed it. But before that, one of the extra reasons I was reluctant is that I had gone to see Spring Awakening for a friend's birthday in New York, like maybe 2 years before that.
I don't know anything about that.
Just hated it so much. I'm sorry, anyone who loves Spring Awakening. I know there are many people, including my friend, who was seeing it for the second time because she loved it. And I just couldn't stand it.
Did she feel so your
she may dislike? Have. I think since then we've talked about the fact that I hated it so much.
No, but you know that feeling when you're watching something
and
you're into
the
it?
The wave of someone else loathing it is like washing over you.
Or like you can feel that they're looking at their clock.
Yeah.
I mean, not their clock. Yeah. They brought a clock to the movie theater. The play. They're looking at their watch or their phone.
Yeah, I definitely have. And I've definitely been in the position where I felt responsible. Like, suddenly you're hosting this event.
Yes.
Suddenly you feel responsible. Yes. Like, you have to apologize and account for why you like it
you
in the moment.
You wrote it, directed it, produced it.
Yeah.
And you're also hosting.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like Spring Awakening. I think for the same reason that I thought maybe I wouldn't like Rent. But I did enjoy it when I saw it. But
Spring Awakening is like it wouldn't have a plot.
I'm going to look up what the plot is and I'm going to read it
to
you.
Does it have a plot?
It has a plot. It's here's how what I remember saying about it. I know you guys, a lot of you probably really like this show. Because like I said, it's a real divider. I know tons of people. I probably know more people who like it than don't. Let me just give you this.
I guess it reminds me of when, you're in chorus in grammar school and you have like spring fling.
Okay, so that's, yeah. So this will
that's
be a fun exercise.
Like no
Tell
plot.
Me what you think. Yeah, I know you say no plot, but come up with what you think the plot could be, just like if a loose
Spring
plot.
Awakenings. Okay, so somebody's going to fall in love. So I think there's boy meets girl. Maybe it's boy meets boy.
And, that's a good guess.
And I would say that boy loses boy and then boy gets boy.
Okay.
That's the plot I'm going with.
So it sounds kind of light.
Yes, it sounds very light. Spring Awakening.
Well, listen to this. Spring Awakening is a rock musical with music by Duncan Sheik and a book and lyrics by Steven Sater. It is based on the controversial German play Spring Awakening, 1891, by Frank Wedekind, which was banned in Germany for some time due to its frank portrayal of abortion, homosexuality, rape, child abuse, and suicide.
Wow.
That's right. All of those things in one musical. Abortion, homosexuality, rape, child abuse, and suicide, set in 19th century Germany. So I want to add Nazis because I feel like there are Nazis in it too. Am I crazy, guys? Anyway, everything that could possibly, like, it's the darkest. That's just all of that material. That's too much for me. That's too much for me in one musical. It felt so heavy that
German.
It felt heavy-handed.
1891, Germany.
I love what I'm seeing right now.
Well, has anyone lied down here in your...
Only me.
Oh, really?
I have before because sometimes when my back is fucked up. Ursula, by the way, guys, for those of you who keep track, is sitting on the floor. And she just lay down on the floor. And that felt like a huge invitation for me to lie down on the floor.
I know. Well, I'm like, I'm on a shag rug.
I know. You might as well just get it. It's a pretty comfortable one,
too. No one can see this.
Exactly.
So how would they know except if you ratted me out?
Which I guess I just did. You just did that. But there's nothing ratty outy about it. It's a celebration. Speaking of a celebration,
that's all lie down.
Spring awakening. So yeah, you didn't see that description coming.
Unless you're.
I'm lying down because I'm a little sore because I played tennis yesterday and I have a little bit of tennis elbow. But before that, I was shooting a Kickstarter video that I won't give away what I was doing, but it was very physical because eventually this Kickstarter video will come out and I'll encourage people to watch it.
Are you producing?
I was doing something very physical. I'm going to be in a film that it's fundraising for.
Nice.
So I agreed to do like a little, like try to help get people interested
trailer.
In, yeah, giving money. But the thing that I shot has nothing to do with what the movie actually is going to be. But so I know that's very obtuse. I'll explain it to you when we're offline. But basically I was doing a lot of physical stuff that I was doing for, to be funny. But you don't think, at least I don't, some people are smart and they do think, but I never think to stretch before I'm going to quote unquote do something funny.
No.
Even though it's exercise and it's strain, just like life. Like if you were going to do an exercise in real life, you would warm up for it.
Yes.
But I can't tell you how many times I've made that mistake where it's like, oh, in this scene, you're just going to be running. And then you realize at the end, I just ran for 2 hours straight.
I should have
close-ups, master coverage, and I never stretched. And then you wake up with a Charlie horse in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Oscar actually is kind of, he always has an on again, off again, bad back issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually his sacrum. Whenever he does improv, his back is usually, coincidentally, it always seems to flare up like the week before he's going to do improv.
Of course.
Or some show with you like to do.
Yeah. Theme park.
And I always say to him, okay, so you're going to perform tonight. We all know that you're going to A, take off your shirt, and B, you're going to carry somebody or be in some very strenuous position. Could you maybe stretch?
You're so smart.
Could you stretch a little bit? And he says, oh, yeah. And he never stretches.
Yeah. God, that's so true, though. Nothing is worse than improv if you're a physical improviser, which I tend to want to be. I think that's one of the reasons that we all like doing theme park together is that we all like kind of big action stuff instead of just standing in one place and talking. And plenty of that happens too much of it still, but we all try to like shake it up by being very physical. And yeah, for sure. Every time I do a show, I do something that like, if someone told me to do it in real life, I'd be like, oh no way, I'll hurt myself.
No.
And all bets are off when you're trying to get a laugh.
Yeah. That's the beauty. All and he can never off. Feel it on stage.
Yeah. You don't feel it. You're all like, you have all the adrenaline in the world.
That's the beauty.
So when you were in high school, when you were a teenager, were you athletic? I know that you knew at an early age that you wanted to be a performer, but was that kind of, I don't want to say balanced out, but was there other stuff? Like what were your other interests?
I was a dancer since I was four. When I decided at four, I'm going to be a ballerina. My stepmom's friend took me to see Baryshnikov down at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
Ooh, that's fun.
And I had never seen anything more beautiful than those long tutus and those extensions of those ballerinas. And I walked out of there and I said, I want to do that. I want to look like that. I want to be able to stick my leg like that and twirl. And so I fell in love with ballet and I danced probably until mid-college. And then I resumed it again a little bit in my 20s, and I haven't done it in a while.
Just to establish this, guys, I have to say that you are the kind of person when you walk into a room, you can tell that.
Aww.
You just have that carriage of
Well, the four-year-old the in me really loves that you said that.
Yeah, really, you can really tell. Like, there's no surprise to anyone, I'm sure, when they find out that you danced.
So I did dance in high school. I went to Beverly Hills High School, the famous, and at the time I was there, 90210 was the first one. The first 90210. I'm that old. Was on the air, and we were like, it's not like that.
Right.
We're not like that. But we all watched it like fanatically, religiously. Yeah. So I was at Beverly Hills High School. They had a terrific drama department, which I really was like on the periphery of. And they had a great dance department, and I was in that. And I got into, they have a great dance company, or they did at that time, led by a woman named Janet Roston. I don't know if she's still there. I think she finally retired her ballet slippers. Mm-hmm. Actually, it would have been, she was a modern dancer.
She hung up her modern dance shoes.
Well, and the, you jazz, don't really, which are barefoot.
Oh yeah, you're right.
You're barefoot.
She chopped her feet off.
She chopped her feet off
and hung them on a wall in her office. What you got to do? Modern
That's
dance.
Terrible.
What choice did she have?
She's walking around on little ankle studs.
Yep.
Ew.
Okay. That's horrible.
So she had this amazing dance company. I was in it my junior and senior year. I was into that. I remember the cool kids, and I remember they partied, and that kind of always scared me. You know, I think my mom
I knew you were going to say,
to her service, whatever. She, from an early age, she would say, don't do drugs and alcohol. I tried alcohol once, and I ended up in a bathtub and unconscious. And
I guess that's not what I thought you were going to say, because you said that she was rehearsing and she wanted to be a rock star. I think I thought you were going to say that, like, you did learn by her experience not to do that stuff.
I did. Her one experience.
She woke up in a bathtub.
No, I think it was also kind of layered with. Yeah, unfortunately, my mom, for whatever reason, being very young, she was 25 when she had me, she wasn't alone. A lot of people did. But she was young emotionally, and she often did that thing where you talk bad about the other parent. And so she would always say, you know, your dad, she would always say he's an alcoholic, which isn't really fair because people are supposed to self-diagnose that.
Yeah.
But she would scare me, and it's just, there's so much fun storytelling here. My mom was a born again Christian, and that was an interesting experience. And I bring that up probably because I remember her asking, she took me to her church, and there was a lot of performance art where they took a crippled woman who would come down the aisle in a wheelchair, screaming every bad word and she was convulsing. And, I'm like a 8-year old child at seven or eight. And I'm freaked out. And the preacher man, he's pounding her forehead with the palm of his hand, like, heal, praise the Lord, Jesus, praise Jesus. And after he does his thing, she stands up, and she's a nice woman, and she speaks lovely. And then we all get into a line, and my mom insists that I go up and pray for my father, who's going to hell because he is living in sin with my stepmom. So that I think that's part of why I never really experienced drugs or alcohol. There are those of us who like to lose control in drugs and alcohol, and then there's the other ones, me.
Who, you can count me in.
Who don't want to lose control?
Yeah, I think that's very much.
There's already
the truth
for a lot.
Me. I wanted to lose control when I was a teenager, and then I had such negative experiences that came after, which you guys all know from, I'm sure, listening to Bamford's episode and so forth. That losing control when you're not planning to is so scary that it just becomes not interesting to be out of control. And then you're really trying too hard to hold on to it. So I guess the idea is the balance in between. But for you to have such a precarious, strange side of things with your mom from such a young age, and so much of that sounds like kind of manic too, you know?
Yeah.
That I can definitely see. It could almost go either way. You almost could have become a substance abuser to try to numb out from that experience, or to try to control and hold on and be perfect, or, you know. Yes. And it's interesting because I think you know, we don't have to get too much into the world of ballet, but I know that past guests, some had really only positive experiences with it, and then some had the sort of negative experiences as their body started to change and they started to feel like identity crisis a little bit about the pressure of that. And
I actually, I didn't get obsessive about ballet, and probably part of it was because I didn't have the feet to have like that beautiful arch. Mm-hmm. And I knew that kind of early on. And so I didn't really get like the, I'm in ballet class 6 days a week.
Okay.
I was a 3-dayer. Mm-hmm, I would go Monday, Wednesday, or Friday. And I knew once I was kind of in high school and I was like, oh, I'm not going to be a ballerina. I'm not going to have that dream. My feet are just not obliging. They don't look as pretty. I have to work too hard.
Funny? There's nothing you can really do. I mean, I can't look. I don't have this toe knuckle. I can't believe I'm doing this. And yes, I can. Of course, I always do things that you can't see. But I can't. That
She's
I can't
pointing
point.
To her toe knuckle.
I can't. This toe won't curl
it's her
down.
Right
more.
Toe.
That's the best
Big
point
toe.
I've ever been able to do. That there's just like
that's it.
That won't point. There's no amount of I can't do exercises to strengthen that point. I don't have the ability. That's the way my toe is made. And so when I was taking dance, it was like, well, that's the best you're going to get. The other one kind of will.
Yep.
But the but this toe just doesn't have, it's like a dead nerve ending.
But I don't
or something.
Know that anyone would ever notice that from
I don't know.
The audience.
I was very aware.
You were, yes, yeah. Of course. I had a very good friend, Heather, who was a really beautiful ballerina, and she and I were pretty close, and she was in the Nutcracker a bunch of times, and she was a smoker, and she had bulimia, and like all the things that, you know, you traditionally, mm-hmm. you, that underside of ballet that you're like, what? These most beautiful ballerinas are not really doing unbeautiful things behind
right.
the scenes.
Right.
And I knew, I was like, oh, well, I'm not, no matter how much, you know, I can't get all like, perfectionistic about mm-hmm. that's not really a word but
yeah it totally is
okay because it's just not happening so I'm just gonna enjoy it and I think I was also in love with since I was a kid I was like I didn't like Dr. Seuss because I thought the drawings were ugly.
That's the first time I've ever heard that.
But
it totally makes sense. I get it.
I wanted beauty.
Yeah.
I wanted the ballerinas and the tutus. So I wasn't going to smoke and be bulimic because that didn't fit the visual of what I thought a ballerina should look like on and off stage.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I took my obsession in other ways, probably like liking boys that I shouldn't have liked. Mm. Okay, so I'm going to just say what's in my head. Senior year of high school, Eric Menendez shows up and he has a crush on me.
Oh my God, wow.
And that was like my first... that was my first huge crush. I wouldn't say I was in love with him. I was infatuated with him.
Sure.
But, yeah. And,
boy, that'll do a number on you. I would
imagine. It did. And I
for anybody who doesn't know who that is, I advise you to Google.
Well, he's in jail now.
Yeah.
Because he killed his parents, with, shotguns, with he and his brother, his older brother. That was the year, and he did it the year we graduated. So it would have been the summer. It was August. So anyway, I dated him briefly in high school, and, so instead of, you know, being bulimic or whatever, I picked, you know, terribly
you really,
disturbed.
You really were the best at picking the worst guy.
I did not. I really
you,
did.
You won.
He's the only one who killed his parents.
Oh, God. That's so awful.
I can't think. What else?
Oh,
what,
yeah.
Who else could I have picked to fall in infatuation
Listen, you hit bottom.
With.
Yeah, you hit bottom really
it's
young. You got
up
it out
from
of the
there.
Way. It can only be up from
it's
there.
It's only up from there. And I have to say
man.
That all of like the people I've fallen in love with, they've just gotten, I've picked better and better and better and
good.
Better.
Yeah. Good. Well, yeah, it would be terrible if it went the other way.
No, sometimes you kind of get in a rut and you just pick the same guy over and over again.
Did you do that?
No, they really, no one ever killed their parents after Eric. None of my
boyfriends. They might have thought about it, but they stopped themselves before 'twas too late. Yeah, I always say I guess when I hear people say like he's not my type or she's not my type, I think to myself like, do you, and I often follow that statement by the other person up by saying, oh, that, do you say that because you don't like that person and you can't put your finger on why, and so you just say they're not your type, or do you have a type? Because I'm very interested in the idea of people having a type, because I've never felt that I had a type. You know what I mean? I never felt like, I always felt like if you put, you know, 10 guys that I dated in a room together, few of them would even know what to say to one another. Like, I've never, you know what I mean? I don't have like, oh, you always date that person.
You don't have a type.
I don't think I do. Maybe someone would argue with me, but I never felt like I did. And when I look at like the important relationships from like, say, age 17 up till now, they really don't have a lot in common.
I would say that.
I mean, how many Hispanic, how many Cuban?
Well, I started with a Cuban.
Did you?
Eric Menendez.
Oh, he's Cuban.
Half Cuban.
Gosh, I really don't know enough about Eric Menendez.
I didn't do that on purpose. I swear to God. I started with a Cuban and now I have ended with a Cuban. Oscar is...
It doesn't get any better than Oscar Nunez as far as I'm concerned.
But it's a nice, I'm glad I went that way. I'm progressively.
But did you feel, do you feel that way? Do you feel like you were like, can you say like, other than bad boys to begin with, it progressively got better? Were you like, I always liked tall guys, I always liked shorter guys, I always liked brunettes, I always liked funny guys, I always liked athletes, like...
Okay.
Is there a through line?
Yes. They were all very charismatic, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. very charming men. I don't know if Eric liked alcohol, but all of the men I've been with have liked alcohol way more than I have. Mm. I would say, I don't think of Eric Menendez as funny. He didn't make me laugh, but,
I mean, he was peculiar, funny, peculiar, like kill your parents, peculiar,
funny, like dangerous. Funny.
Yeah.
I don't really know what's going on here.
Oh my God.
I feel like I'm missing part of this picture.
Oh man.
They've all made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. Yeah. And then they've just gotten kinder and kinder and kinder.
That's so lovely.
Yeah. Eric Menendez. So anyway, yeah, that was what I was doing. When I was in high school, I wasn't in the popular crew, but I wasn't a loner.
Mm-hmm.
I had, friends. I still have this, one of my best friends, her name's Jade, and she, and I became friends in ninth grade. And I remember kind of near the end of my sophomore year, I was kind of introverted, and I was introverted for a very good reason. When I was in eighth grade, I had like an experience where pretty much every guy in my entire grade ganged up on me, and I was very popular at that time. And it was kind of started by these four guys, and they wrote a letter, a petition against me, and they presented it to me.
I mean, that's so official.
Yeah. And they presented it to me.
Like the Scarlet Letter.
Of eighth grade. And
why did they decide that they didn't like you?
Because they thought that I was controlling my friends to like decide who would date them.
Oh my. They thought you were like the evil queen.
Yeah. Turns out wasn't what was going on.
You weren't obsessing over your friends' boyfriends?
No, but my friends were, who were they were dating. But somebody's heart got broken, and they wrote a letter that they wrote a leather.
I wish they wrote it on leather.
I wish they'd written it on leather.
They unfurled it on leather. A leather hide.
Anyway, so the outcome of that was I became very introverted. I went from like pretty outgoing and fearless to very quiet and
Tamed you.
Let's just hope that nobody notices me.
Yeah.
And somewhere around the end of 10th grade, I realized, look how involved my friend Jade is. She's like
she's in the cheerleading thing and she's here and she's doing this and she's totally got like this full active life. I can do that. I can be a cheerleader. That would be fun. So they had a dance version of cheerleading called Song Girls, and okay. they performed it at halftime. And so because of being inspired by my friend, I ended up joining it with her, and we did that together for junior and senior year. It was pretty
fun.
Song
Girls.
Song Girls.
You were a song girl. Yeah. I just looked at the time and realized that we're running out of it. So I'm going to jump okay. into the game portion.
Okay.
Let's do one of these real quick and see if we hit a question that you haven't already answered.
Okay.
Pick a color, and you can describe the color as whatever you think it actually looks like.
Okay. I'm going to go with bleu.
Bleu. B-L. I'm going to spell it the French way.
Please.
E-U.
Nice.
And Suzette bleu. Pick a number.
I'm not picking Tina's number 8.
Wow.
I really like that number. I'm going to pick 7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Another number?
5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One last number.
3.
Number three.
Memorized.
What is your... No, actually, this is fairly new, and this one I don't think I've ever come to before.
Okay.
What is your worst memory of high school?
Back it up to 8th grade?
Sure. Back her up.
Let's go back to high school. Let's answer it fairly. You know, it's funny. I think I'm going to go with just post-high school.
Yeah.
When I got the news, I was in Hawaii. Jade and her family took me to Hawaii with them. And that week, we landed in Oahu, and my parents called me and they said, "We want you to find out from us and not the television."
Okay. That, it's hard to beat that as bad news.
Eric, his parents had been killed, and I sent him flowers, and the rest of the 5 days of that trip, all I wanted to do was go back.
Oh, God.
And like console him because he was a victim in my head. And I remember months progressed, a couple of months went by, and I actually went to visit him while he was in prison. And I'd never seen this in a movie. It came instinctually, and it makes me laugh that I did this now. But I was sitting there through the glass, right? And I'm talking to him, and I am totally like in lust or love or whatever for him. And I say, your friends and I, we all support you. And I put my hand to the glass. I did. I put my hand to the glass. I'd never seen it in a movie. I've subsequently seen it in a lot of movies. And I thought, I didn't come up with that.
Yeah.
I didn't invent that. And wait, I put my hand to the glass and he looks at my hand and he laughs.
Oh.
And I'm like, that's weird.
Oh,
that's a weird response.
God.
And
wow.
And then I go home and I think about that. And then there was like he was on the television constantly every day. And finally, somewhere in the next like week or so, I was like, he's guilty.
I can't believe I'm laughing at this, but it's really funny.
I can't believe it. I can't believe he totally did it.
Oh, my God.
And
that's a really, again, win at worst memory.
Right?
It doesn't get much worse than that.
Unless I was the one being murdered.
Correct. Of course.
Then
that's
would be like
really
lovely
grim.
Bones or something.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Yeah. Well, we'll never get that answer again on the podcast. Really great first, much to my chagrin that you had to go through that or that his family went through that. Okay. Now we're going to do some MASH. Let's see. First category, what do I want to give you? I'm going first category.
By the way, I was obsessed with this game in 7th grade, and I would play it while watching The Love Boat and Fantasy Island and eating Jelly Bellies.
Oh my God. You just described a really great era in history.
Could not get
Jelly
enough.
Bellies and MASH and those things. That's like a fun, I would still do that, all of those things.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go with, first thing is three movies, you know, it's off the top of your head. So no pressure. It can always be things that later on you're like, why did I say that? We all get that. But I'm going to go with three movies that you wish you could have been in from like, especially movies that you loved when you were younger.
Shocker. The Sound of Music.
Love it.
And then the next thing that popped in my head was Shakespeare in Love.
Great. What a charming movie.
Wasn't it? I thought of a couple more. I'm just going to list like all of my favorite movies. I'm going to jump.
You only get one more, so you better pick a good one.
I know. All right. I'm going to pick one that I really possibly could not be in, which is Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, it's such an amazing movie.
I'd like to be Morgan Freeman.
That movie, actually all three of these movies for different reasons, but certainly Shawshank, and I know this is true for everyone, but I mean, wasn't that the kind of movie where you just felt changed after you saw it? Like,
yeah.
I just felt like it, like that profoundly changed me in some way that I may not even be able to put my finger on.
Yes.
It's just a lovely, lovely movie. I haven't seen it in years and years. Maybe I need to revisit. How about three places that I'm including myself in this, because I love traveling with Ursula and Oscar when we go to do theme park shows. So three places that it would be really fun. And I, obviously it's harder now because they have a beautiful daughter, August, that
I can't believe I haven't talked about August a little for bit.
I know why, because it's,
that's the longest I've never
it's
talked
true,
about
we went
her.
Way back. We did it. We can do an all baby, all the time podcast episode next. Three places that, we get to go perform theme park, and like the flight isn't, there's no long flight. There's no nothing. Right. It's like snap your fingers and we're there, and we all get to hang out together and we do shows.
Okay. Let's go to Barcelona.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
Gosh, I probably should pick a new place that we haven't been to. I know you just went to New Zealand.
I would love,
but wait, have
to
you been
there.
To Australia?
No.
Okay. Let's go to Sydney.
Love it.
And Paris has been on our mind. Let's say Paris.
God, it's the best. It's never not a good time to go to Paris.
Right?
I don't care. It's just never not a good time.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't care if anyone wants to argue with me. I think there's a song about it called I Love Paris in the Springtime.
Oh, I thought there was going to be a song like If Anyone Wants to Argue with Me.
You haven't heard that song?
Yeah.
You know what? It doesn't get that much play because the title is painfully long. How about three talents that you wish you could have just out of the blue? Suddenly you're really great at three things that you don't know really how to do now.
Well, because I'm with you and I've watched you guys and I just love, I love the way you do your shows.
Aww.
I really do. You're fantastic.
Oh my God. Thanks so much, yours.
If I could have that talent, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Get
if I could
on just that stage with us, that'd be a blast.
Just take a little pill.
Yeah.
The improv
voila.
Pill.
The improv pill.
Oh, yeah.
Some people would say that that's alcohol, but it's not. It's not. Okay.
That's
improv,
fine.
Great. Love it. Very flattering choice. me.
Another skill. I'd like to scuba.
Yeah. I kind of wish I could do that too.
That whole ear pressure thing.
I'm secretly afraid of it.
Yeah.
And then someone in my life, not in my peripheral life, had a stroke after getting like an air bubble in their suit.
Yeah.
And she was paralyzed. Half her body was paralyzed for 6 months.
Oh.
She made a full recovery.
Oh.
Full recovery.
That's good.
Did not make me want to scuba dive.
No.
I've really held on to that.
Yeah.
Even though it's super rare. Scuba diving, that's not going to happen in this imaginary mashed case.
When you first asked the question, I was thinking, I wish it could be fly. But then I could just, you know, transfer that to the ability to fly a plane.
Yes, I will say that you could be a pilot, and then I will jump right into...
Paraglider. I want to be a paraglider.
Ooh, nice. Now I will get into magical powers. So I'll put fly down.
Okay. That's
two more magical powers.
I was going to say read people's minds, but I think I do that to a fault. I don't
it
like
it tricky.
I have that
you
special
might not
skill.
Wanna, yeah.
Yeah,
you
I don't,
might not want to know.
I don't
want to
know what you're thinking. Okay. So flying. What if I could run at the speed of light? Could really get to where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And then I do have a sense of smell that's kind of superhero-ish. It's annoying to Oscar.
So we could take it all the way. So when you were pregnant, you probably, it was like, did it go, did it?
It didn't
just
change.
Oh, it did. Yeah.
No,
you just
I was
got what
there.
Normal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was already there.
That's hilarious.
Poor Oscar. He loves wearing cologne. There's only one cologne I can like,
yeah.
I'm like, this is the one. And he like tries, he's tried all the 20. Yeah. He's like bottles that he just,
caresses.
He does. He looks at them lovingly. He hopes that I'll go out of town for a weekend so he can wear one.
So funny.
Let's see. Special. Well, I would like the ability to lift heavy things.
Yeah.
Like a truck.
Super strength.
Yeah. Like the kind of thing, you know, you might need in an emergency.
Yeah. Imagine how satisfying that would be if you could just be like, step aside, everyone, I got
this. I've got it. Yeah. I've got this.
Let me lift up this bridge that's collapsing with all the people on it. Oh, that's grim.
Superman.
Yeah, basically. You got it. These are good. You can't. He can do all these things. You're not wrong. Okay, what about... do I want to go down the road against my own dear Oscar of giving you three crushers that you get to... in some way consummate your crush with,
even if it's so, like, because yeah, because that's what MASH crushes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Then there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So who are your three crushes that, you know, this will be up to you. It could be that you have your one night with them. It could be that in this imaginary MASH life, you're with them whenever you want, or it could just be like you go out on a date with them, whatever pops into your head, these people.
Okay. Now I feel really sad. I do, because I don't want to have a date with anybody.
I know.
Oscar, I want to have a date.
I know. So just crushes.
Does that seem really lame?
I know. No, it's really sweet, and we don't even have to do it. We could turn this into three people that you would just love to be able to spend a day with.
Okay,
like, that aren't about, even
yeah.
That's
Obama.
Not even romantic.
Like, I want to have a dinner with Obama.
Perfect.
I would love to have dinner with him.
Yeah.
We'll keep it in the fella range, because mm-hmm. otherwise I'd put Oprah. Mm-hmm. Okay, what other fellas would I like? Well, no, not Woody Allen. No, I admire his work, but I don't think I'd actually enjoy.
It's hard to
know.
I think
he would make me nervous.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Emma, I think Emma Bates picked Woody, and I even said, like current day Woody Allen, huh? And she was like, yeah, I think it would be really interesting. It'd be fascinating. And I get that.
I probably wouldn't pick him either. To pick Steve Martin, even though I know that some people say that he's... sometimes
he might
rude
be very shy.
But you know what, he's not
with you,
not on my date,
not on
with
your,
him
exactly,
because I'm not like
yeah.
out of the blue coming
you're
up
getting
to him
the version of him that you want
is. I won't
yeah.
tell him how
yeah you're
he
not going to bother him in public when he's a private person and shy.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, love it.
And well, Brad Pitt just popped in, which is so pedestrian. Everybody, right? It's such a, from LA to New York, don't they pick Brad Pitt? I'm sure. Now, Oscar has a man crush on Daniel Craig, and that's also popping in my
mm-hmm,
head.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I want to meet Daniel Craig.
You guys could all have dinner with Daniel Craig.
I want to see who this guy is that has my husband's interest.
Man crush? That's the best thing ever.
We used to have one on Jason Schwartzman.
He did? Oh,
yes,
those are two very different people.
Yes, but yesterday he told me he's over Jason.
I'm sorry, Jason.
Sorry.
Next time. What did he do?
Daniel Craig, he still has
Jason Schwartzman listens to this podcast and is like, what can I do to win back Oscar Nunez's love? Okay. What about three? Like, and I'm asking this because you have very good taste and you have a lovely, well-appointed home too. So
thank
I don't
you.
Know if you have, if this is something you can come up with off the cuff, but are there three kind of... like a room that you don't have in your home right now, but it would just be fun if you had, like, it could be as whimsical as you want. It could be like a ridiculous playroom for August, or it could be like the most amazing office that's like all windows, or it could be a greenhouse,
yes.
anything like that. That's
yes.
like a really fun, or all of those
yes.
three things.
No, it's like you this morning, the gardener actually this week, he cut back all of the dead shrubs on the side of our, we have like a side yard, and it opened it up. And the last two mornings when I'm up at 6 a.m. alone with August, I stand out there. She's in my sling, on me in a sling, and I stare at the space and I think, I want this to be like an awesome deck that's her play area. But then when you said I could have anything, then I'm like, why don't we have a deck? And then we have like my office area that's like a greenhouse, but it never feels cold in the winter
mm-hmm.
because all that glass in the winter mm-hmm. is going to feel mm-hmm. really cold. And then we'll put that on the second floor. And then on the first floor, we'll have the mother-in-law ensuite.
Oh, this is great. Now this is
yes.
three you just described.
Three.
I don't know how I make. Okay, so but
you can
you
pick
only
between,
get one.
Okay.
So I'm going play deck One of the three things will come true, and then maybe in life that all three will. Play deck, I'm going.
I like the greenhouse office.
Greenhouse office.
That's warm in the winter.
Cozy greenhouse office.
Cozy greenhouse office.
I'll never remember what that says. And then in-law.
Ensuite.
Ensuite. Three. Oh, yeah. So now that we just did that, three languages that it would be fun to be able to speak.
Well, I did take 7 years of French and can't speak a lick of it. So we'll let's put that on the top of the list.
It's all in your brain somewhere. It's like if we hypnotized you, it would come back.
That's right.
That's French, the first beautiful one.
My daughter's half Cuban and my husband is Cuban. It'd be nice if I spoke fluent Spanish. Great. I live in Los Angeles.
Yep, never a bad idea.
Sometimes I think my Spanish is better than Oscar's.
It might be.
When we were in Spain on our honeymoon, he literally looked at me at one point and he's like, "What did he say?" I don't know. And it's not my job. It's yours.
It's and very easy to picture.
And I want
to
know, I want to know, do I want to know Mandarin or Cantonese? I want to know one of them.
Okay.
Because maybe
I feel like Mandarin's prettier, but I don't really know what I'm basing that off of.
Which one's more business-like?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be, but then it'd be really nice to know, like,
I feel like I want to speak Japanese.
Arabic or something like,
yeah,
like really, like no one would ever guess. Yeah. That I knew it.
Yeah.
And then I could just like know it.
Yeah.
And eavesdrop. Why would I want to? Now let's do Mandarin.
Okay, got it. And then last but not least, if you could if there's one of three things, so a list of three things that you, I know that this is a weird thing to say because of course you also want her to learn on her own, but if there were three things you could assure for August without ever having to worry about it, I know the kids got to get there themselves, but the mother instinct, looking past that reality and looking past the fact that it's good, are there three things that you wish that you could just be sure of for her that you wouldn't have to worry about?
Oh yeah, I think about it all the time. In fact, when I was listening to Tina's podcast, I kept my heart was breaking because I was like, what if that were August? What if she were going through that? What if she goes through that? Yeah. How can I blah, 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 protect her? I don't know if it's every mother, but I certainly experience an irrational intensity of wanting to protect her from any suffering in the world, from crying when I'm not in the house to being in love with a stupid boy or a stupid girl that breaks her heart.
Protection from suffering.
That's unrealistic.
I know.
But what
that's
is realistic?
This game is, though.
What is realistic? Mm-hmm. And I do hope that I'd feel very good if I gave this to her. I hope that I can give her the ability to trust her instinct and her intuition, because that's been my biggest life lesson, is that I have a really good intuition and I've only gotten in trouble when I say, oh, but that person says it's not right, so I'm going to listen to them because they've got to be right because they're not me.
Right.
And I have a stomach ache and I can't really explain why this person's giving me a stomach ache, so I'm probably wrong.
Yeah.
And then now I'm just like, no, I have a stomach ache. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. And oh, I love that.
I'd love her to be able
would that we all didn't get so led astray from those gut instincts.
Yeah.
That's a great one. What, just one more.
For her?
Mm-hmm.
That I could give her? Oh, God. It's kind of on the suffering. I don't want her to fall in love with the wrong person. You know what would be nice? It would be nice if she... this is what we're hoping to give her, is the ability to keep trying and, persevere.
Mm-hmm.
When she gets knocked down,
mm-hmm.
take a breath and get back up.
Love it. Perseverance. Love it. Okay. Now just tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay, I did it differently this time. Instead of a spiral, I did a zigzag. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oop, wait, hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Sorry. Okay. I'm pausing this. I'm going to do some quick tallying.
Okay.
And I'll come back with your future.
Oh. This is how you do.
I love the idea of being a fortune teller through MASH. This is just how I tell your fortune. I'll tell your future, but this is definitely coming true.
Can I say one more thing before you?
Yeah.
This, which is, thank you for asking me to be here with you.
Of course. First of all, it's a great excuse to just get some one-on-one lady time with you.
Yes. And I agree completely. And I'm completely touched. And I was also very scared to do it because...
Yeah, no reason.
Yeah.
This has been a complete joy.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Please.
Do I have to do this weekly in order to see
now
you?
Now you have to do this weekly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Let me start with... this is not on the MASH thing, but you can see as much of me as you want. I can predict that for your future right now. Okay. I'm going to start with the fact that... when you go home, there's going to be a marvelous deck that is just dedicated to August's playtime.
Yay.
Which is kind of wonderful. The other stuff can follow, but that's going to be first things first. Let's get that play deck into the works. I know that you had a lot of fun playing when you were younger. I don't know if anything was more fun to you than being in The Sound of Music.
No.
But that was probably a really, really positive experience.
It was. I would recreate. I'd make all the neighbor kids on Reeves Drive. There were 9 of us, and I'd choreograph and direct.
Did you?
And we would sing to the cars driving by at the 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock
That's
rush hour.
Fantastic.
And I would take turns of being, you know, the eldest sister and Maria from Trap.
It is that good. It's just such a great movie, musical.
And
I guess
to sing
I should
at cars, it's pretty fun.
What a gift!
Yeah.
You weren't even charging anything like a lemonade stand.
It was just free.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, I'm excited to say that we're going to be doing a lot of performing in this upcoming metropolitan city. And while you're there, you and Oscar keep an apartment there.
Ooh.
So not only can we go for theme park related stuff, but you guys can just go whenever you want. And it's in Paris.
A flat.
You have a little pied-à-terre.
Yeah.
In Paris. Not bad.
We didn't get the mansion.
You didn't get the mansion. You got an apartment.
That's okay.
But in Paris, that's
commitment.
What you would have. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I always like when it works out that way because nobody has a house in Paris.
No.
So it's flat. You got a flat. You're in Paris,
nice.
By the way. You could be a shack, but it's not. By the way, apartments in Paris can be like
mansions.
The Dakota mansion. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
that be awesome?
Yes.
Could you get working on that?
I know.
Straight away?
I know. These really make me want them to be real. I want you to know that you are fluent in Mandarin.
Really?
So that, I don't know where you're going to use that, but you know what you might be able to be of help is like when you're having your dinner with Obama.
Really?
If he needs any
finally.
Like translator or anything like that, you know, I mean, you're really up in the biz with Obama.
And
so
people just won't see it coming when
you
break out
if you
in
just
Mandarin.
Bust out in all this Mandarin, it's going to be fantastic. The other thing that you are very good at is scuba diving.
Finally.
But not to be outdone, you can also run at the speed of light. So satisfying. I just would be so satisfied by that. Because I like the idea that you're not teleporting. You're actually running. So you're feeling the invigoration of running.
Do I break a sweat?
I mean, I don't even know.
I don't know. Or maybe if I go less than the speed of light, I don't break sweat so that I could arrive and go to dinner.
That's
when I get there.
Right. You just dial it down
right.
to the speed of sound.
Yeah.
Amazing. And then I will leave you with the fact that...
I'm really excited about my dinner with Obama.
Oh, yeah. Please. That's not to gloss over
and
that.
August's
that's pretty fantastic.
Deck.
And then just to leave things with something August related, and this I feel absolutely sure will come true because it's something that you can instill in her, is just absolute perseverance. She will be tough when she needs to be, tender when she needs to be, and she will not give up and she'll be very strong.
You know what? She kind of came in the world that way.
See?
Yeah.
You know what's so good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing the
podcast.
Thank podcasters.
You for having me.
Guys, we will talk to you next time on the podcast. I welcome you to weigh in per huge in various forms of social media. I bet you good day. Hey, remember when all of time stood still? As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.